Chapter 55. Into this pit had drifted uncounted generations of withered leaves, half filling it. Oak, beech, and chestnut, rotten and brown alike, mingled themselves in one fibrous mass. Manston descended into the midst of them, placed his sack on the ground, and raking the leaves aside into a large heap, began digging. Anne softly drew near, crept into a bush, and turning her head to survey the rest, missed the man who had dropped behind, and whom we have called the First Watcher. Concluding that he too had hidden himself, she turned her attention to the Second Watcher, the other woman, who had meanwhile advanced near to where Anne lay in hiding, and now seated herself behind a tree, still closer to the steward than was Anne Seaway. Here and thus Anne remained concealed. The crunch of the steward's spade, as it cut into the soft vegetable mold, was plainly perceptible to her ears, when the periodic cessations between the creaks of the engine concurred with a lull in the breeze, which otherwise brought the subdued roar of the cascade from the further side of the bank that screened it. A large hole some 4 or 5 feet deep had been excavated by Manston in about 20 minutes. Into this he immediately placed the sack, and then began filling in the earth, and treading it down. Lastly he carefully raked the whole mass of dead and dry leaves into the middle of the pit, burying the ground with them as they had buried it before. For a hiding place the spot was unequaled. The thick accumulation of leaves, which had not been disturbed for centuries, might not be disturbed again for centuries to come, whilst their lower layers still decayed and added to the mold beneath. By the time this work was ended the sky had grown clear, and Anne could now see distinctly the face of the other woman, stretching from behind the tree, seemingly forgetful of her position in her intense contemplation of the actions of the steward. Her countenance was white and motionless. It was impossible that Manston should not soon notice her. At the completion of his labor he turned, and did so. "Ho, you here! Apostrophe, apostrophe," he exclaimed. "Don't think I am a spy upon you, apostrophe," she said, in an imploring whisper. Anne recognized the voice as Miss Aldclyffe's. The trembling lady added hastily another remark, which was drowned in the recurring creak of the engine close at hand. The First Watcher, if he had come no nearer than his original position, was too far off to hear any part of this dialogue, on account of the roar of the falling water, which could reach him unimpeded by the bank. The remark of Miss Aldclyffe to Manston had plainly been concerning the First Watcher, for Manston, with his spade in his hand, instantly rushed to where the man was concealed, and, before the latter could disengage himself from the boughs, the steward struck him on the head with the blade of the instrument. The man fell to the ground. "Fly!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Miss Aldclyffe to Manston. Manston vanished amidst the trees. Miss Aldclyffe went off in a contrary direction. Anne Seaway was about to run away likewise, when she turned and looked at the fallen man. He lay on his face, motionless. Many of these women who own to no moral code show considerable magnanimity when they see people in trouble. To act right simply because it is one's duty is proper, but a good action which is the result of no law of reflection shines more than any. She went up to him, and gently turned him over, upon which he began to show signs of life. By her assistance he was soon able to stand upright. He looked about him with a bewildered air, endeavoring to collect his ideas. "Who are you?" "Apostrophe," he said to the woman, mechanically. It was bad policy now to attempt disguise. "I am the supposed Mrs. Manston, apostrophe," she said. "Who are you?" "Apostrophe, I am the officer employed by Mr. Ronham, to sift this mystery which may be criminal." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," he stretched his limbs, pressed his head, and seemed gradually to awake to a sense of having been incautious in his utterance. "Never you mind who I am, apostrophe," he continued. "Well, it doesn't matter now, either it will no longer be a secret." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," he stooped for his hat, and ran in the direction the steward had taken, coming back again after the lapse of a minute. It's only an aggravated assault. After all, apostrophe he said hastily, until we have found out for certain what's buried here. It may be only a bag of building rubbish, but it may be more. Come and help me dig. Apostrophe apostrophe he seized the spade with the awkwardness of a town man, and went into the pit, continuing a muttered discourse. It's no use my running after him single-handed, apostrophe he said. He's ever so far off by this time. The best step is to see what is here. Apostrophe, it was far easier for the detective to reopen the hole than it had been for Manston to form it. The leaves were raked away, the loam thrown out, and the sack dragged forth. Hold this, apostrophe he said to Anne, whose curiosity still kept her standing near. He turned on the light of a dark lantern he had brought, and gave it into her hand. The string which bound the mouth of the sack was now cut. The officer laid the bag on its side, seized it by the bottom, and jerked forth the contents. A large package was disclosed, carefully wrapped up in impervious tarpaulin, also well tied. He was on the point of pulling open the folds at one end, when a light-colored thread of something, hanging on the outside, arrested his eye. He put his hand upon it. It felt stringy, and adhered to his fingers. Hold the light close, apostrophe he said. She held it close. He raised his hand to the glass, and they both peered at an almost intangible filament he held between his finger and thumb. It was a long hair, the hair of a woman. God! I couldn't believe it, no, I couldn't believe it. Apostrophe the detective whispered, horror-struck. And I have lost the man for the present through my unbelief. Let's get into a sheltered place. Now wait a minute, whilst I prove it. Apostrophe, he thrust his hand into his waistcoat pocket, and withdrew thence a minute packet of brown paper. Spreading it out he disclosed, coiled in the middle, another long hair. It was the hair the clerk's wife had found on Manston's pillow 9 days before the Carriford fire. He held the two hairs to the light. They were both of a pale brown hue. He laid them parallel and stretched out his arms. They were of the same length to a nicety. The detective turned to Anne. It is the body of his first wife, apostrophe he said quietly. He murdered her, as Mr. Springrove and the rector suspected, but how, and when, God only knows. Apostrophe apostrophe and I. Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed Anne Seaway, a probable and natural sequence of events and motives explanatory of the whole crime, events and motives shadowed forth by the letter, Manston's possession of it, his renunciation of Cytherea, and installment of herself flashing upon her mind with the rapidity of lightning. Ah, I see, apostrophe said the detective, standing unusually close to her. And a handcuff was on her wrist. You must come with me, madam. Knowing as much about a secret murder as God knows, is a very suspicious thing. It doesn't make you a goddess, far from it. Apostrophe apostrophe he directed the bullseye into her face. Pooh, lead on, apostrophe she said scornfully, and don't lose your principal actor for the sake of torturing a poor subordinate like me. Apostrophe apostrophe he loosened her hand, gave her his arm, and dragged her out of the grove, making her run beside him till they had reached the rectory. A light was burning here, and an auxiliary of the detective's awaiting him. A horse ready harnessed to a spring cart was standing outside. You have come, I wish I had known that, apostrophe the detective said to his assistant, hurriedly and angrily. Well, we've blundered, he's gone, you should have been here, as I said. I was sold by that woman, Miss Aldcliffe, she watched me. Apostrophe apostrophe he hastily gave directions in an undertone to this man. The concluding words were, go into the rector, he's up. Detain Miss Aldcliffe. I, in the meantime, am driving to Casterbridge with this one, and for help. We shall be sure to have him when it gets light. Apostrophe apostrophe he assisted Anne into the vehicle, and drove off with her. As they went, the clear, dry road showed before them, between the grassy quarters at each side, like a white riband, and made their progress easy. they came to a spot where the highway was overhung by dense firs for some distance on both sides. It was totally dark here. There was a smash and a rude shock. In the very midst of its length, at the point where the road began to drop down a hill, the detective drove against something with a jerk which nearly flung them both to the ground. The man recovered himself, placed Anne on the seat, and reached out his hand. He found that the off wheel of his gig was locked in that of another conveyance of some kind. "Hoy!" said the officer. Nobody answered. "Hoy, you man asleep there!" he said again. No reply. "Well, that's odd. This comes of the folly of traveling without gig lamps, because you expect the dawn." He jumped to the ground and turned on his lantern. There was the gig which had obstructed him, standing in the middle of the road, a jaded horse harnessed to it, but no human being in or near the vehicle. "Do you know whose gig this is?" he said to the woman. "No," she said sullenly. But she did recognize it as the steward's. "I'll swear it's Manston's. Come, I can hear it by your tone. However, you needn't say anything which may criminate you." What forethought the man must have had, how carefully he must have considered possible contingencies. Why, he must have got the horse and gig ready before he began shifting the body. He listened for a sound among the trees. None was to be heard, but the occasional scamper of a rabbit over the withered leaves. He threw the light of his lantern through a gap in the hedge, but could see nothing beyond an impenetrable thicket. It was clear that Manston was not many yards off, but the question was how to find him. Nothing could be done by the detective just then, encumbered as he was by the horse and Anne. If he had entered the thicket on the search unaided, Manston might have stepped unobserved from behind a bush and murdered him with the greatest ease. Indeed, there were such strong reasons for the exploit in Manston's circumstances at that moment that without showing cowardice, his pursuer felt it hazardous to remain any longer where he stood. He hastily tied the head of Manston's horse to the back of his own vehicle, that the steward might be deprived of the use of any means of escape other than his own legs, and drove on thus with his prisoner to the county town. Arrived there, he lodged her in the police station, and then took immediate steps for the capture of Manston. XX. The events of 3 hours, 1. March the 23rd. Midday, 36 hours had elapsed since Manston's escape. It was market day at the county town. The farmers outside and inside the corn exchange looked at their samples of wheat, and poured them critically as usual from one palm to another, but they thought and spoke of Manston. Grocers serving behind their counters, instead of using their constant phrase, "The next article, please?" substituted, "Have you heard if he's caught?" Dairymen and drovers standing beside the sheep and cattle pens spread their legs firmly, readjusted their hats, thrust their hands into the lowest depths of their pockets, regarded the animals with the utmost keenness, of which the eye was capable, and said, so's. They'll have him avore night." Later in the day Edward Springrove passed along the street hurriedly and anxiously. "Well, have you heard any more?" He said to an acquaintance who accosted him. "They tracked him in this way," said the other young man. "A vagrant first told them that Manston had passed a rick at daybreak, under which this man was lying. They followed the track he pointed out, and ultimately came to a stile. On the other side was a heap of half-hardened mud, scraped from the road. On the surface of the heap, where it had been smoothed by the shovel, was distinctly imprinted the form of a man's hand, the buttons of his waistcoat, and his watch chain, showing that he had stumbled in hurrying over the stile, and fallen there. The pattern of the chain proved the man to have been Manston." They followed until they reached a ford crossed by stepping stones on the further bank, where the same footmarks that had shown themselves beside the stile. The whole of this course had been in the direction of Budmouth. On they went, and the next clue was furnished them by a shepherd. He said that wherever a clear space 3 or 4 yards wide ran in a line through a flock of sheep lying about a ewe lease, it was a proof that somebody had passed there not more than half an hour earlier. At 12 o'clock that day he had noticed such a feature in his flock. Nothing more could be heard of him, and they got into Budmouth. The steam packet to the Channel Islands was to start at 11 last night, and they at once concluded that his hope was to get to France by way of Jersey and St. Malo his only chance, all the railway stations being watched. Well, they went to the boat. He was not on board then. They went again at 10:30. He had not come. Two men now placed themselves under the lamp immediately beside the gangway. Another stayed by the office door, and one or two more up Mary Street the straight cut to the quay. At 11:15 the mail bags were put on board. Whilst the attention of the idlers was directed to the mails, down Mary Street came a man as boldly as possible. The gate was Manston's, but not the close. He passed over to the shaded part of the street. Heads were turned. I suppose this warned him, for he never emerged from the shadow. They watched and waited, but the steward did not reappear. The alarm was raised, they searched the town high and low, no Manston. All this morning they have been searching, but there's not a sign of him anywhere. However, he has lost his last chance of getting across the channel. It is reported that he has since changed clothes with a laborer. During this narration, Edward, lost in thought, had let his eyes follow a shabby man in a smock frock, but wearing light boots who was stalking down the street under a bundle of straw which overhung and concealed his head. It was a very ordinary circumstance for a man with a bundle of straw on his shoulders and overhanging his head to go down the high street. Edward saw him cross the bridge which divided the town from the country, place his shaggy encumbrance by the side of the road, and leave it there. Springrove now parted from his acquaintance, and went also in the direction of the bridge, and some way beyond it. As far as he could see stretched the turnpike road, and, while he was looking, he noticed a man, to leap from the edge at a point 200, or 2, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.